Previously on Popping Collars.
Oh, one of my favorite scenes is when Leo and the girls are on the hammock, and one of them goes, "Yeah, it gets better," and they all crack up. Yeah. Okay, thanks.
Well, that's the only way that moment would have worked if, for, like, 5 years from now, is if left at it. Yeah.
Welcome to Popping Collars, the podcast that lives at the intersection between religion and pop culture. I'm your host. My name is Greg Knight, and I am in Palm Beach, Florida. With me are my co-hosts, Betsy Gonzalez from Alexandria, Virginia. Hello, Betsy.
Hey, Greg.
Liz Easton from Omaha, Nebraska. Hello, Liz.
Hey, Greg.
And our special guest this time is Martin Elfert from Spokane, Washington. Welcome back to the show, Martin.
Hi, Greg. I've in fact moved to Portland since we spoke last.
Oh, my gosh.
Way to go, okay. Greg.
And our special guest this time is Martin Elfert from Portland, Oregon. Welcome back to the show, Martin.
Thank you very much. I'm so glad to be here.
I've done this too much so
Come
far.
On.
Misreported where people are from. This is episode 42 of the 1,191st ranked podcast in the iTunes spirituality category. I think we've found our niche. I think we are in that 1,200 range. That's just who we are. That's our dharma.
But we strive.
That's what
we're
are.
We're strivers, Greg. I'm going to lean in and maybe it'll change.
And our topic today is Black Mirror. So this is a television anthology series from the UK that features very Twilight Zone-esque stories of the dark side of life and technology. So let's just get right into it. There's 7 episodes currently on Netflix. Which story stood out to you and why? Martin, you want to kick it off?
I'm terrible at favorites, but the one I did watch twice was White Bear. Twist endings are a staple of horror, it seems to me, but they're so rarely done well. Often directors are trying too hard to have a satisfying twist ending, but I thought that one really, really worked. It, you know, Shades of the Usual Suspects, it's a show that I needed to watch a second time in light of the conclusion.
Over the course of that episode, there's this woman that's sort of being hunted, and people are just filming it on their phones, and it's this very weird kind of twist on the zombie story a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like, you just sort of see these people with their phones and kind of see them as mindless and stuff like that. And it made me think about how stories are told and how the perspective of the story affects how you see characters. Because you're with her in that moment. You're with her in her panic, only to realize that, surprise, maybe she's not quite the good guy.
Right.
Over the course of this story. And it's that's the thing, though. Like, who it is that we identify with, the experiences that we have, influences so much of who we kind of root for. What about you, Betsy? Favorite episode?
I've been drawn to, like, relationship-y things. So, like, the entire history of you.
Mm-hmm.
I found to be really, and that was the first time, and it's something that comes up at other times in the episode of implants and things and the whole world being recorded from your perspective. And God, that ability to go back and like replay everything and dissect everything, that our memory is creating something that is really from our perspective and isn't necessarily big T truth. And it turns out, you know, the guy who's completely paranoid and has an anger problem and a drinking problem, he's right. And, like, that is, like, yikes. You know, like, I was expecting him to just be kind of off his rocker and this technology has made him nuts. But, no, he was able to hunt it out and sleuth it up. And I'm in the midst of doing an audiobook at the moment, The Circle by Dave Eggers, which also is dealing with similar technology issues and the ability that there everybody wears – they get to this point where they have these little cameras that everybody can wear, and they call it, you know, going clear, being transparent, essentially. And so politicians, like 90% of politicians at a certain point in the book, are all wearing them. Because if you're not wearing them, then what are you up to?
I've had the experience more than once of coming across a journal entry, my own journal entry from some time ago, or a letter I had written, which thoroughly contradicts my own memory. Mm-hmm. I don't like that experience very much, especially when I wrote a story in which I was a better person than the journal entry indicates. I find that really quite disquieting.
Liz, yeah. What about you?
So that one, The Entire History of You, was one of my favorites, probably mainly because it felt really realistic. Like, I can sort of see that being a thing that could happen, the way that with social media right now, we're sort of obsessed with documenting and preserving our own perspective. And I had an experience recently. I was on a big trip for work. I realized that I don't take I post a lot of pictures on social media, and I realized that I don't take pictures anymore that I don't share online. So I'm editing like, oh, I can't take a picture of that because I don't really like the story it tells, or I don't really want people to see that. Like, why can't I just take that picture for myself, like for my own memory or whatever it is? So I think there's this way of sort of, we are almost obsessive about curating our own lives and our own experiences and interpreting them. It just doesn't seem that far off. And the other one that I really liked was Be Right Back, mm-hmm. where the guy dies, and so she has like a robot basically come back and as sort of a tool, I guess, to help her grieve the loss of her partner, this robot approximation of him, which also, that one just seemed really tender to me and was a little bit of a departure from, it was scary too, it was disturbing, but it was a little bit of a departure from the thriller-esque other episodes.
That one was the one that stood out to me, and I think that the thing that I really liked about that episode was that it flew against type a little bit for how that story usually plays out, because it has that kind of horror bend to it where, you know, she's created what's essentially like a Frankenstein monster in her bathtub. And, you know, the horror trope in that regard is that, well, that thing is ultimately going to betray her and, you know, that's the sinister thing that's in the house. But all it does is love her. Like, it at no point does it ever stop loving her. But she can't handle the fact that this it's not the love that she had. It's not the love that she needed. It's not a person. But she can't bear to let it go. So it's just this thing that lives in the attic that's a memory now. It's this thing of love that she... That's still painful. I mean, you guys have hit it on all the stuff that I sort of noticed is like the technology on these episodes, they're advanced technology, but they feel so close to where we are now that they feel relatable. And even the ones that are crazy, like the implants and being able to relive your memories and stuff, there's something about it that feels familiar somehow with what we're doing now, like sharing our personal lives to the point that now, like, the thought of, like, sharing a scenario that happened to you earlier that day on television doesn't seem that far-fetched at the end of
the day. Walk around with a GoPro on your head. You know, like, I have a Fitbit. I like it. I like knowing how much I slept last night and how many steps I walked. I also know that that information now lives out there in the universe somewhere and can probably be accessed by people. What I don't like is when I find out about employers who require, you know, for a reduction in insurance premiums or whatever, require their employees to wear them. It just seems like it's this shadow of a society where we're being tried, you know. And then I start thinking, like, I'm crazy. That is so paranoid. That's the thing that a paranoid person thinks, but it's disturbing.
I think Brooker has said that the show is set 2 seconds in the future, that the world is, it's barely in the future, or it's an allegorical world for right now. Mm-hmm. But it's not by any means, it's not Blade Runner or 2001, which is really distant from where we are.
So the first episode of Black Mirror is the Prime Minister episode with the pig, right?
National Anthem.
That's like the most famous one, I think. Like, that's the one that gets talked about on Twitter sometimes, especially whenever I see David Cameron trending on Twitter or Brexit. I know that there's going to be a Prime Minister and a pig like tweet at some point. over the course of it. The thing about that story is that all the other stories have some form of technology that feels distant, futuristic, mm-hmm. except for that one. Like, that's just television. But it's dependent on the technology that we have today in order for it to work, right? Mm-hmm. It's dependent on this idea that we have to see this car crash. And the bigger the car crash, the more eyes are going to be glued to it somehow.
I found
it has to be recognized.
The political episodes were the ones that were the closest to. I mean, maybe in the Waldo moment, the technology to have him be Waldo. I don't know whether that actually exists. But the political commentary episodes seem to be less technologically harnessed and more about just politics in general. I mean, that's why when we talked about doing this episode, we're like, how do we not talk about the political landscape going on right now when, you know, oh no, they pulled in an actor. And so now all the polling prior to that, they were all sympathetic towards the prime minister. And then after that, it was over. The polls had no more sympathy for him anymore. Waldo calling out the political system and that sort of commentary on politics as circus and, you know, that idea of, well, I'm just not going to stand for anything and screw you, you know, which at the moment in the U.S. feels like a lot of what's going on. I'm going to support somebody who's kind of a big middle finger to everything else that's going on.
A nihilist little bear.
Yes.
I don't know if this was a conscious decision or not, but one of the things that flows out of it, that one taking place with real technology, is Charlie Brooker and his colleagues established that they were native speakers of social media. One of the things that's so surprising about that first episode is that computer screens look like they actually look. For whatever reason, the Hollywood set decoration department, I don't know who's in charge of how computer screens look in movies, but whoever's in charge of that keeps on giving us computers that in no way look like computers. There's kind of these, like, you know, the green screen full of code. And when you break into the tower, there's this, like, three-dimensional map that shows up. This has nothing to do with anything. It's
characters hammering furiously on the keys
right.
as they're trying to figure out.
Right. Yeah, right. And perhaps running to the wall to pull the server apart before that anonymous takes over. And that was really striking. Oh, like, actually, that's what Twitter looks like. That's what Facebook looks like. And this is very much how these platforms function.
Yeah, you have a character who watches the whole thing unfold and never leaves bed mm-hmm. the whole time. He never leaves his bed. Twitter especially, like whenever there's a mass shooting or something like that, all of a sudden it's just like, well, gosh, I got to keep getting updates. I got to keep, you know, staying informed of what's going on. And it's just random tweets. It's no more information than people sort of standing on the corner speculating
well,
sometimes.
And in that National Anthem episode, when at one point the girl's like, but this has been going on for an hour. They're like, she wants to turn it off, and they're like, but it's been going on for an hour. And I'm like, oh, God, and everyone's still watching? I mean, at a certain point, no one's speaking anymore. You know, the voyeurism culture is also very much on display here and on critique. I mean, and that is really the element of these episodes, is the social critique. The popular culture critique, it was what was so great about the original, you know, Twilight Zone run. And I went looking it up because I'm like, okay, so what is Black Mirror? Arcade Fire also has a song named after this. So I went hunting, and here we can quote Wikipedia. Claude Glass is the other name for Black Mirror, and it was used by artists, travelers, and connoisseurs of landscape and landscape painting. And it's like a black mirror. It looks like a black mirror. And so you would use it. It's almost kind of like hashtag filter, right? Mm-hmm. So Claude Glass's had the effect of abstracting the subject reflected in it from its surroundings, reducing and simplifying the color and tonal range of the scenes, particularly scenery painting, giving it kind of a painting quality. So I found that so interesting. So this is like, so we're filtering reality in some way in each of these episodes. We're filtering something that the filmmakers want to make a commentary on and looking at it in a very particular way.
Yeah, and at the risk of stating the obvious, another meaning is this is every screen there is when the power is turned off. Suddenly it's this is you staring back from this kind of inky void.
Yeah, because the things that feel the grossest about it are the things that you're like... ooh, that's me, or ooh, no, and that is, you know, when we rubberneck, when we, you know, do whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, that those moments feel the grossest. And I mean, and that is, it is, this is essentially parable. That's what Jesus liked to do all the time. He's going to use things that you're familiar with, mostly. So it's setting, you know, roles that you understand, like politician or priest or whatever, people you understand in a concrete way or have assumptions about, to then tell you a story where your behavior is being called out in the story, more than like, you know. I've been hating on Samaritans for years, but then the Samaritan's the hero? What the what? You know, that sort of idea of critique.
Well, and that was the thing about almost every episode of Black Mirror. I felt called out by them. I mean, I think that element of parable that you just described was really, really rang true. And they all, to me, had something to do with the self. What is the self when so much of our experience is filtered and translated through some other medium, you know, online, whatever it is,
through the political polls or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, or through, you know, the social media, sort of broadly. What happens to the self when we're sort of projected, I guess, in that way? I don't know. That's the part that felt really concerning to me, because I can feel it happening, you know, to all of us. I think that this political season is an example of that. There's this spectator thing that's happening, and you know, we're all lining up to watch it, and at the same time it's completely unbelievable and ridiculous, and but we made it, we created it. This is the political campaign, this is the race that we deserve as a society, you know, the 24-hour news cycle, the reality television, just like the constant fear-mongering culture. Like, we created this.
These are parables for our times, parables that, as near as I can figure, never get to resurrection. That's one of the things that is so startling about the show, and maybe this plugs into what you're saying, Liz, that it's a show that's just stuck on Good Friday. I think there's at least two crucifixion stories in the seven episodes. White Bear is a crucifixion story, and the first episode, where there's actually a substitution. The crucified one is stepping in and setting somebody else free through his own humiliation. I'm intrigued that this is a creative team that doesn't ever want to leave us in a comfortable place. We're never going to get to an empty tomb with these folks.
If we talk about all the parables being explaining the values of the kingdom of God, that's what the parables are talking about. You know, what does radical love look like? What does neighborliness look like? Those sorts of ideas. And that each one is communicating all those things. You know, what is the kingdom we are building now through this Black Mirror? What are we building, and what are we valuing now? Mm-hmm. And that seems to kind of be the thing that's like, ugh, well, this isn't anywhere close to that kingdom of God I've been building now, that we can build now, but it is also coming at the same time, you know, there and here.
Where I found the through line with these shows is in the Waldo episode. With that episode, it made me think that these are all stories of regret. Mm-hmm. Like, these characters are all regretting choices that they've made, or they're regretting where they are in their lives, or they're all regretting something.
Which one is the Waldo episode?
That's the politics, right? So that's you have this stand-up comedian who portrays this sort of character who's a animated bear, who's just making fun of, you know, the political process and all of this stuff.
He's
and he ends up
on a Daily Show kind of show. Mm-hmm.
He ends up having a relationship with one of the candidates, and she spurns him at one point, and he decides that he's going to just break the relationship as best he can. Like, as best he can as a stand-up comedian, he's going to hurt her on stage, in public, in front of other people. And then immediately, I think, regrets the decision that he makes. And I think that, you know, God, that feels so, you know, social media has given us a chance to put really sort of hurtful, non-thought-out kind of bumper stickers on Facebook walls and Twitter feeds and stuff like that as we start to think through who it is that we're talking about and who it is that we're generalizing and who it is that we're hurting. We start to regret some of those things. It's like you're saying, Liz, this political cycle that we're in and the rhetoric that's coming out is about how can I hurt the other side as much as possible with my words. The parable of these stories is that you are going to regret what comes on the other side of that. Just pay attention to who you are. Do kindness. That's what we're called to. We are resurrected people.
Well, and right? It's not just political. It's social, too. Like, in the last couple of weeks, or really few weeks, we have the child who fell into the gorilla cage, and then tragically the child who was eaten by an alligator. And in both of those cases, it's like the social media world just rallied to eviscerate these mothers for having a moment that I would imagine most parents are actually quite familiar with, of taking your eyes off your child for a second, and they're fast and they're little and they are gone. And it was just cruel. I mean, it moved very quickly to just absolute cruelty in the face of unspeakable grief. And all of that was facilitated by social media. It was like a lynch mob on the internet. And those are real things that have real lasting impacts on people, not just the individual parents who experience this, but then a culture surrounding parenting, particularly motherhood. Socially, it was like there was this powerful force to criticize these people. And I could imagine that was just a step away from a Black Mirror episode.
What I also found, though, Greg, too, like in that Waldo episode, what I found even more powerful, and I kind of left behind the relationship with the other woman who was running for MP, that what it really became about was the fact that he was unwilling to compromise, that he was being pushed to have his character become something and be something that he was not willing to do, and he chose not to, and he stepped out of that. And away from it. And I think with our current landscape at the moment, it's kind of, well, you know, how do you keep bowing and bending and compromising on, you know, AR-15s or, you know, whatever? Or how do you bow and compromise and support a candidate who you said 3 months ago during the campaign was a totally untrustworthy moron? Like, how do you compromise yourself inside the system or not, you know, who you're going to be? And so, and it was interesting, he chose the moment, but of course, because it's Black Mirror, you know, the world goes on and Waldo's on the back fins of airplanes and everywhere else. And so that, because the character, he couldn't contain the character. He didn't own the character. Yeah, but things can change.
When I was a kid, I was maybe like 10, and we had gotten like a really good snowfall in North Carolina, which is really rare. But this was like inches of snow. So I took my Star Wars figures out into the snow and was playing like, you know, little battles that I wouldn't be able to do if it was just grass, right? But eventually, like, the story that's playing out in my head requires that these things get buried in the snow and I can't find them at some point. Like, I've lost them. And so my little lizard brain says that the easiest way to find them is to take a stick and just start beating the snow with a stick, and eventually they'll come flying out. And they did. They came flying out, but they were minus like a leg and an arm and like all these things. Like, I broke my Star Wars figures like trying to find them. And, you know, in the moment I was like, haha, that's hilarious. That's so funny. Like, that, what a funny scenario. After, you know, a week and the snow is gone, and all I have are broken little Star Wars figures, it's not quite as funny to my little boy brain. And that's what I feel like the world is full of, are like little boys who break things and then like regret breaking them. I always think about that whenever I think about stories of regret, and especially when I hear stories about 20-year-old boys who think they have the world figured out.
You know, what is hell in Black Mirror? It's never-ending time. It's eternity. It is disconnection from others. It is
dehumanizing.
Yeah, dehumanizing. It is repeating the offense and living inside the offense over and over again, even in the entire life, even in that, he's subject to living in that house alone, mm-hmm. replaying his relationship.
Holy smokes. Yeah. I've certainly heard it said for people who work very close with people in poverty say that the real crisis is not when you run out of money, but when you run out of connections. Mm. That isolation is when you really begin to despair.
Stuff. So, Martin, where are you? What are you doing? How can people find you on the intertubes in Portland?
Well, I'm a priest at Grace Memorial Episcopal Church in beautiful Northeast Portland. You can find us at grace-memorial.org. I blog and write a sometimes advice column on SpokaneFaithAndValues.com, and I'm an unfaithful Twitterer. I kind of do that in spurts and in fits and starts. But you can find me from time to time at Martin ELFERT. And you wanted to say something that's floating around in my head?
Yeah, absolutely.
I just finished reading, as a great many people have, I just finished reading Atul Gawande's Being Mortal. Towering, brilliant book. Beautiful and hopeful meditations on what a good idea it is to plan for the time when you're elderly and near the end of your life. Surprisingly exciting, surprisingly fun. Just a wonderful and important read.
Liz, where are you? What are you doing? How can people find you on the Cowboy Camino?
So I'm the canon to the ordinary in the Diocese of Nebraska.
What does that mean, Liz? Why don't you explain to people what that means?
Oh my gosh, this is the bane of my existence. What does it mean? What is the canon to the ordinary? I don't know. So the bishop is the ordinary, and I'm his canon. And it's sort of like in a political model, it might be like the chief of staff. Or in a corporate model, it might be like chief operating officer. In my imagination, it's like I'm the Leo McGarry to Bishop Barker's Jed Bartlett.
Oh,
that's like in Game of Thrones, you would be the hand of the king.
I don't know Game of Thrones, but I don't. So that's what I do. It's sort of like an extension of the bishop's ministry. And yeah, you can find me on Instagram and Twitter, both at Liz East. On Instagram, I am one of those people that doesn't put down my camera, and I try to just sort of show off a little bit of what life is like in the Diocese of Nebraska. And most recently, for me, that's been coming back from a week-long road trip through north central to western Nebraska. There's an old abandoned railway corridor that's been turned into a hiking trail called it's called the Cowboy Trail, and we call it the Cowboy Camino. So we were visiting our churches along that trail, and it was just fantastic. It was a whole week with churches large and small, really hopeful, wonderful, exciting things happening, and then really hard, scary things in the midst of these small, shrinking communities. It was just sort of the whole nine yards. So we spent a week on the road, a different church every day, and just spent time along the Cowboy Trail. So it was great, and there are some pictures of that on my Instagram.
So our concerns last time we were all together were snake bites.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dysentery,
sure.
Broken wagon wheel.
Broken axle.
Yeah.
Ran out of ammo. Yep. Couldn't replace your ammo.
None of those things happened.
People behind. Oh, good. Mm-hmm.
For us, for Dioneb standards, this was a pretty flawless road trip. There was no food poisoning. There was no automotive mishaps. It was pretty great.
Betsy, where are you? What are you doing? How is it being free? How is summer break?
Yeah, so I'm kind of on break. So yeah, I'm a little bit ensconced in my watching has been discovering Veep, on HBO, which is...
Love it.
So hilarious. The first couple of episodes, I'm like, what is this show? This is not the West Wing. Not. And then I was like, oh, everybody, they're all morons. Everybody's an idiot. And the whole, and they're, you know, the staff is going to screw up. She's going to screw up. How are they going to get themselves out of this? And just the, it's just, I love it. I love
I heard someone say that Veep was the most accurate towards Washington politics.
Which is because frightening as hell.
Because it was all people with inflated senses of self arguing about who has the right colored lanyard.
Yes.
At the end of the day, that's what it's
that's
all
what
about.
It's all about. So that I've been enjoying watching that. But then I have, so I'm reading City of Mirrors. I'm listening to two other audiobooks, The Circle by Dave Eggers and the third book in the George R. R. Martin Game of Thrones books.
And what about you, Greg? What are you up to?
Okay. My name is Greg Nye. I'm the director of children and youth ministries at Bethesda by the Sea Episcopal Church in Palm Beach, Florida. You can find us on the web at bbts.org. Okay. That's my plug. And then I am not a priest, but I read, too.
Good for you.
And so I read a book called Apostle. And then the subheading, the subtitle is, what is it? A Trip Among the Tombs of the Twelve or something like that. So it's this guy, his name's Tom Bissell, and he traveled around to all of the basilicas and cathedrals or whatever that claim to have the most pieces left of the original 12 apostles. Yeah, so it's like they had like a femur, you know, or something, you know, so they got to claim like St. Bartholomew, you know, or something. So it's really cool because it's part travel journal, but he also kind of says, talks about like why, like what it is that this apostle did, like what mythology has come up around this apostle and, so it's part sort of textual criticism a little bit too, intermixed with with just sort of stories about what happened to him while he was visiting these places. And he goes all over. He's in Toulouse, France. He's in Santiago, obviously, in Spain. He's in Kyrgyzstan. You know, he's in India at one point. Like he's all over the world. Visiting these tombs of these apostles, and it's funny because he's not a person of faith. He's a lapsed Catholic. It's not a book about faith. It's a book about why we tell stories about our faith.
Mm. All right, Greg, sign us off.
You can find Pop and Collars on Twitter at Pop and Collars. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/poppingcollars. You can also find us on our website, poppingcollarspodcast.com, where you can find each and every one of our shows. The most recent episodes of our shows you can find on your favorite podcasting app, be that iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher. All we ask is that you subscribe, rate, and review our show. Recommend it. Share it with your friends and your families and your book club. And also, we're featured on EpiscopalCafe.com each and every single time. We love EpiscopalCafe.com. We know you will as well. Check them out for all your Episcopal news and beyond. And with that is Pop and Collars for this time. Thank you, Betsy. Thank you, Liz. Thank you, Martin, for coming on the show. We'll see you next time.
Keep those cows popped.
Read a book.
Go read a book.